Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, the education report. Dan Friedel talks about students in the United States training for jobs. Then, Jonathan Evans brings us a story about the Olympics. I will return with this week's words and their stories. Today, we talk about an expression that comes from music. We finish our 30 minutes together with our series on America's presidents, written and hosted by Kelly Jean Kelly. Today, she tells us about George Herbert Walker Bush. But first, the education report.
Monica Bentley is the administrator for Edison Academy in the American state of Virginia. The academy helps students learn about things like computer security, car repair, hair and beauty care, and supervising a professional kitchen. Bentley has many years of experience helping students learn about careers. But she recently had trouble persuading one student, her daughter, to try out a job training class at the academy. She didn't want to travel, Bentley said of her daughter, whose main school is about 30 minutes away from the career training center. I wasn't going to make her do it, but I think it would have been a great opportunity. Sometimes a school system has just one training center for every 5 or 6 high schools. And asking high school students to travel from their local school to another building is just one of several obstacles career training centers face. They need to persuade students to take more than 1 or 2 classes. They also need to expand programs that prepare students with basic training for higher level training after high school. Another problem is when students are interested in taking career training classes, but their parents do not agree. They might believe the student should take more classes in subjects like math and science. Bentley said, sometimes parents' wishes prevent training centers like the Edison Academy from getting the community support they need. However, once parents see the kind of education their child can receive from a career training center, they usually change their minds. Charles Wilkinson recently graduated from Edison High School and took some auto repair classes at the academy. He described the conflict between the high school and the academy. He felt as if the adults in the high school did not support students who wanted to take career classes. The attitude that students doing well shouldn't waste their time in CTE classes is heavily damaging to the experience and needs to see a change, he said. Alicia Hyslop is the Senior Director of Public Policy for the Association for Career and Technical Education. Hyslop said, training centers like the Edison Academy are good for students who do not want to attend college. But the people in charge of the centers also need to tell people that many students who take classes there move on to attend college. She said, high schools around the U.S. need to work hard to align secondary programs with post-secondary programs and build those seamless pathways for students. Hyslop gave the example of a student who might earn a starting credential for engineering or computer security in high school. After graduation, that student could then go on to study that subject in college. Recently, the advising company McKinsey produced a podcast called Grabbing Hold of the New Future of Work. In it, experts discussed how the COVID-19 pandemic took away some traditional jobs. But they said it made the kind of jobs that can only be done by a human more important. Susan Lund, a global labor expert at McKinsey, said there will not be as many jobs for people who, for example, once helped buyers choose clothes at a store. That is because more people are buying clothing online. She said her company's research shows that in the U.S., there will be 17 million fewer service jobs over the next 10 years. Many jobs in restaurants, hotels, or stores do not require a college education. The experts said they are worried about how those 17 million people will replace the income from those jobs. I'm Dan Friedel.
Thanks, Dan. Next is Jonathan Evans.
South Sudanese runner Paulo Amantan Lokoro is among a group of 29 athletes named to the International Olympic Committee's Refugee Olympic Team. He will compete in the Summer Games in Tokyo from July 23rd to August 8th. Lokoro fled conflict in South Sudan and joined others at the large Kakuma refugee camp in northwestern Kenya in 2006. He did not know at the time that he would soon take part in international sports. Lokoro became interested in the Olympics when he was urged to compete in a 2015 marathon at Kakuma. The event was organized by the United Nations Refugee Agency and Kenya's Tegla Lorupe. Lorupe was the first African woman to win a major marathon, beginning with the New York City Marathon in 1994. Lokoro said of the Kakuma Marathon, "I didn't know I would go far. I was just running. I went to the field and jogged. I didn't have the psychology of being in front or behind. My aim was to just follow the people going in front of me. I found some guys were tired, and then I led them." Lokoro competed in the Rio Olympics in August 2016 as a runner in the 1500-meter event. Returning Olympians on the refugee team include South Sudanese runners Angelina Nadai Lohalith, James Nyong Chingjik, and Rose Nataki Lekonyan. Others include swimmer Yusra Mardini from Syria and judo athlete Popole Misenga from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Another South Sudanese runner, Matthew Lam Joar, will return to the Refugee Olympic team as an assistant to the coaching staff. He wants to share his experiences with other refugees. I will be cheering for my team, a team that I was part of and still am part of, he said. We believe they are the best guys because they have the courage to start running. They are world class, running with the best in the world. In June, IOC President Thomas Bach said it was important to have refugees join with other Olympic athletes to send a powerful message of solidarity, resilience, and hope to the world. Lokoro said he hopes to one day compete for South Sudan in international competitions such as this. One day, one time, if my country settles down, maybe I will go back and represent my country, he said. The 29 refugees competing in the Tokyo Games are from Afghanistan, Cameroon, Democratic Republic of Congo, Republic of Congo, and Eritrea. Others are from Iraq, Syria, Venezuela, South Sudan, and Sudan. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language. We give examples that show how to use them, and sometimes we explain where they come from. Today, our expression comes from music. A chord is three or more musical notes sounded at the same time. The word strike means to hit. But when we play a note on a musical instrument, we can also say we struck a note. So our expression for today is to strike a chord. In its most general definition, to strike a chord means something relates to you somehow. It resonates with you. If something strikes a chord with you, it is familiar to you in some way, for better or for worse. Something can strike a positive chord. It is familiar to you in a good way. It creates good feelings or thoughts. For example, a love song struck a deep chord with James. It is the song he sang to his wife at their wedding. Or maybe the song was playing on the radio when she left him. In that case, the song would strike a negative chord with James. As you can see from those examples, you can add other words to describe what type of chord is being struck. A deep chord, a negative chord. Here are some other examples. A teacher's advice can strike a responsive chord with students, and a politician's speech can strike a sympathetic chord with voters. Those two words, sympathetic and responsive, are commonly used with this expression. You might hear people say something struck a familiar chord. But to me, this sounds a bit unnecessary. If something strikes a chord, it means it is familiar in some way. So we don't need to add the word familiar to the expression. But I have heard it used that way before. Maybe it means something is really familiar. Sometimes we use to strike a chord this way. If something creates strong feelings or thoughts, it strikes a chord. And that something could be unfamiliar to the person. Here is another situation where we use this expression. If something strikes a chord with you, you approve of it. You agree with it. For example, during the election, the politician's position on the economy and jobs must have struck a chord with voters because she won easily. Let's talk for a minute about sentence structure. If you look back at our examples, most, if not all of them, use the word with. With James, with students, with voters. But you can use this expression without the word with. In this way, strike a chord means it caused a strong emotional reaction to something. For example, that movie must have really struck a chord. Everyone came out of the theater crying. Hopefully, learning English continues to strike a chord with all of you. A positive one. And that's the end of this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo. And now, Kelly Jean Kelly.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about George Herbert Walker Bush. Before he became president in 1989, Bush had a lot of experience in government. He spent 4 years in the United States House of Representatives, worked as the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, and led the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. Then, for 8 years, he was vice president under Ronald Reagan. Interestingly, in U.S. history, a person serving as vice president rarely becomes president after the sitting president leaves office at the end of his term. Before George H.W. Bush, the last time such an event happened was in 1836. At that time, Martin Van Buren took office after the two-term presidency of Andrew Jackson. Yet, neither Bush nor Van Buren was able to deal successfully with some of the problems facing the country during their years in office, or to persuade voters to elect them for a second term. While many people respect Bush for his foreign policy successes, his years in office are also remembered as a time of economic problems and social unrest. George Bush was born into a wealthy family in Massachusetts and raised in a Connecticut town near New York City. He had three brothers and a sister. Their father was a business leader who became a U.S. senator. Their mother was active doing public service work. The family employed servants, but Mrs. Bush did not want her children's privileged position to make them think they were special. Instead, she taught them to work hard and help others. When he was a young man, George Bush moved away from home to attend a private high school in Massachusetts. There, he played baseball and soccer and was elected student body president. On his 18th birthday, Bush joined the U.S. Navy. For 3 years, he fought in World War II. At the time, He was the youngest pilot in the Navy and earned a medal for bravery. In early 1945, he married a young woman he had met at a dance. Her name was Barbara Pierce. After the war, she and George moved to Connecticut, where he studied economics at Yale University and played on the school's baseball team. In time, they moved to the southern state of Texas. George Bush worked in the oil industry and became president of a company that sold oil drilling equipment. George and Barbara Bush mostly raised their four sons and one daughter in the Houston, Texas area. Another daughter died of cancer when she was a child. In time, George Bush decided to follow his father's example and enter politics. He became a Republican Party official. Then he was elected to the U.S. Congress, representing part of Houston. Despite having a home in Texas, opponents and the public connected Bush with the East Coast and the upper class. That image created some problems for Bush in the presidential election of 1980. By then, he had held other high offices in the federal government and had been successful as the head of the CIA. But voters liked another Republican candidate, former California Governor Ronald Reagan. Many Americans remembered Reagan from his days in movies and on television. When Reagan was nominated as the party's candidate for president, he asked Bush to be vice president. For 8 years, Bush held the office and worked closely with Reagan on foreign policy and other issues. In 1988, Bush finally won the presidency in his own right. On entering the White House, the new president promised to continue many of Reagan's policies of limited government. While he was a candidate, Bush often said that, if elected, he would not raise taxes. Bush also said that he wanted the United States to be a kinder and gentler nation. He wanted especially to support community organizations in their efforts to reduce crime, homelessness, and drug abuse. He also signed legislation to help people with disabilities and to protect the environment. But Bush faced a number of problems. One was a large budget deficit, created in part by increased military spending during the Reagan years. Another were disputes in Congress with the Democratic Party. And another was a banking crisis. After years of problems in the savings and loan industry, more than 1,000 small financial institutions failed. In time, Congress agreed to spend billions of dollars to help the industry recover. And President Bush had to break his promise not to raise taxes. He pointed out that he needed to balance the budget. However, many Americans and some members of his own party felt betrayed. The economic troubles helped create a mood of unrest in the country. The feeling was strengthened by events around the world. Soon after Bush took office, the Chinese government launched a campaign to stop protests in Beijing's Tiananmen Square. A few months later, the Berlin Wall came down. The wall separated East and West Germany. Many considered its collapse to be the end of the Soviet Union's control of Eastern Europe. At the same time, the leader of Panama, Manuel Noriega, was threatening Americans. He was also accused of supporting drug traffickers and the drug trade in the United States. Bush answered all the events in a calm, cautious way. He tried to keep good relations with China and the Soviet Union. In time, he ordered military action in Panama, and U.S. troops ousted Noriega. Supporters praised Bush's cool head and way of doing things. But critics questioned Bush's decisions. Some said he went too far. Others said he did not go far enough. The same criticisms and support were repeated during the Gulf War against Iraq. In brief, Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein ordered his forces to invade and occupy Kuwait. Bush and other world leaders created an international coalition to seek a diplomatic solution. When diplomacy failed, U.S. troops led international airstrikes against Iraq. Coalition forces also attacked on the ground. In a few weeks, the Iraqi leadership agreed to a ceasefire. Some criticized Bush for letting Saddam Hussein stay in power, but the American public largely approved of Bush's actions. He won praise for helping create an international coalition to answer the Iraqi occupation. The effort showed what some called a new world order. The U.S. and Soviet Union had even worked successfully together. Yet, soon after the end of the Gulf War, Bush failed in his efforts at re-election. The U.S. economy had entered a recession, and Bush was not able to connect effectively with voters, even though those who knew him personally said Bush was a kind, gentle person. One of his last acts as president was to write a note for the candidate who had beat him, wishing him well. George H.W. Bush retired to his home in Texas with his wife, Barbara. They also have a house in Maine. Bush often urged Americans to help others in their community. He put his words into action by volunteering with his church and supporting a local hospital. On his 90th birthday, Bush did something unusual to test his image as a cautious person. He celebrated by going skydiving. For many, Bush is remembered for his connection to other presidents. He is often linked to the Reagan years. Compared to Reagan, Bush is usually considered a less conservative leader, as well as a less charismatic one. By the 21st century, historians began comparing the former President Bush with another president, his son, George Walker Bush, who took office 8 years after his father left it. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Ana Mateo.